thank the organizer for this exciting emergence theorist conference for this year and for last year. I think concept of emergence is very, very universal in both condensed matter physics and high energy physics. So today, I want to go back to condensed matter physics, talking about this emergence of people's IP superconductivity ground state in infinite U-Hubbard model. So actually, this infinite U-Hubbard model is in some sense, it's particularly simple because just one term, just a free Freeman hopping, but not really free because in the constrained subspace, so there's no double occupancy. So although this problem looks like pretty easy, but indeed it's sharply hard. So it's still kind of coincide with the topic here, emergence of complexity system. Okay, so this work collaborating with Professor Pasquan here and Professor Donna Shen and Dr. Hong Chen, who did this DMRG calculation as a benchmark with my tensor network calculation. Okay, first I will introduce some background about this P plus IP superconducting state of spinless fermion system and this infinite U repulsive Hubbard model. I will tell you why I want to think about these two things completely independent things. Then I will briefly introduce what's the tensor product state algorithm and its generalization for Fermion system. Later I will benchmark with some simple free Fermion model and a simple interacting Fermion model with this advanced numerical method. And apply to infinite Hubbard model on Honeycomb lattice, where a P plus IP superconducting state and coexists with Fermion at the order was discovered. Today I'm talking about Honeycomb lattice. Yeah, but I'm working on other lattice as well. So, but I will provide some quantum field theory perspective. It might be universal for any lattice. Yeah. Okay, so yeah, finally I will tell about this story about the quantum field theory approach. Okay, so we know this P plus IP superconductor of a spinless fermion system actually is kind of the minimal and the simplest model for superconductor, although we discover superconductor as like a spin singlet Cooper pair. But if we think about attractive interaction with spinless fermion, we naturally get this so-called P plus IP superconductor, which actually first proposed by Nick Reed and Green. They show that in the vortex core, there's a Majorana zero mode. And due to the presence of Majorana zero mode, actually the vortex core carry non-abelian statistics and people looking for such kind of superconductor for years for the purpose of photorance quantum computation. The concept proposed by Kilaev. Okay, so it seems such kind of model pretty simple and should be easy to find in our universe. But it turns out to be very hard because most electron system, the electron always carries spin, and there's no spinless electron in our world. However, one may think about, oh, let us just apply some like a Zeeman field, maybe implant Zeeman field. We don't want to introduce this orbit current, but we just kill this one component of spin. But it turns out that not work in the BCS framework because we're just doing this mean field calculation, you will find that there's instability of phase separation, and it's very hard to get a kind of spinless fermion superconductivity in the BCS theory. So today, I want to propose some new possibility to realize such kind of spinless fermion superconductivity in extremely strong coupling model, namely starting from this infinite U-Hubbard model. And why I want to consider this infinite U-Hubbard model? Because there's a famous theory due to Nagaoka maybe 50 years ago. He proposed that on a square lattice or maybe arbitrary lattice, if we just dope one hole from the infinite U Hubbard model, we will get a ground state, which is a ferromagnetic state. And of course, usually in the larger U limit, we can also express this Hubbard model as a TJ model. And now we project to this no double occupancy subspace. So C-tilde is just the electron operator in the no double occupancy subspace. And the infinite U limit in this case is corresponding to this G equal zero limit, because infinite U looks like the model is singular. So it's better to define this TJ model and just study this G equal zero limit, right? Okay. So in this example, it's clear such kind of ferromagnetic order is kinetic energy driven, because when G equal to zero, there's no other term except this kinetic energy term. And furthermore, the infinite U limit is an important starting point to understand the strong coupling physics, because we understand this model in the U equal to zero limit pretty well. But on the other hand, if we also understand this model in the infinite U limit, maybe we'll sketch some useful information about the mechanism of high TC equilibrium. However, unfortunately, Nagasa's theorem fails at any finite doping for the system. Yeah, so then leave this problem become some kind of long-standing hardcore open problem for almost 50 years. But nevertheless, Nagasa's state is still eigen state of the infinite U hybrid model, because it does not generate frustration, because if we consider only one component of fermion, the hopping, there's no frustration. So it does not matter if it's a ground state or not, it's always eigen state. So if we add some small magnetic field at a low doping, maybe we can always stabilize it. So this Nagasa state for the infinite hybrid model should be still some very useful and interesting starting point. Okay, so this important problem has been studied by some numerical method actually 2 years ago, based on this advanced density matrix randomization group algorithm. Also thanks to the modern technology, which greatly improved this computing power of computer. And it's very hard to imagine such kind of computation can be done like 10 years ago. And also the algorithm developed pretty well. And now people can like doing DMRG calculation for hybrid model up to 6 lakh. Although it's still 6 lakh, but already we see some interesting information. So the particular hybrid model they studied is this square lattice hybrid model. And they started from this 2 lakh case and show up to 20% doping. This Nagasa ferromagnetic state is still stable, so they call it half metallic ferromagnetic, which is equivalent to the Nagasa ferromagnetic. And 4 lakh also the phase boundary 20%, and 6 lakh also 20%. Then they just have a conjecture and a reasonable conjecture on square lattice. This Nagasa state is stable up to 20% for any kind of for the 2D limit. Yeah. Okay. But today I want to think about some different geometry. So this geometry may be also familiar with us, because the B is like this geometry, the honeycomb, right? And like a graphene, the most easiest kind of material and stable material always have this kind of geometry. And why we think about such kind of lattice geometry for the hybrid model? Because it shares some common features for the square lattice hybrid model. It is multi-insulated with anti-ferromagnetic ordering at half filling, because this lattice have the AB sublattice structure. It's a bipartite lattice, right? Not AB sublattice, but just a bipartite. It might be a P plus IP superconductor at the finite doping due to geometry frustration, because on this kind of honeycomb lattice, this P plus IP, the phase twist like 2π/3, it's similar to this D plus ID. So in this sense, we can imagine this repulsive Hubble-U interaction might be favor such kind of pairing. But on the contrary, on the square lattice, it's not clear such kind of pairing is preferred by the repulsive interaction or not, because the most preferred pairing symmetry is D-wave on square lattice. So that's why Steve White and Steve Kivelson, they did not find this any kind of superconductivity on square lattice hybrid model in the infinite U limit. And on the other hand, due to some previous work published on Nature, people speculate there could be a possible spin liquid phase in the intermediate region in the Hubbard model. And also, finally, I will propose some possible realistic material and for experiments who are interested in realizing such kind of P plus IP superconductivity, which could be a good resource for tolerance quantum computation. Okay. But we investigate the infinite U-coupled model on honeycomb lattice by performing a thermodynamic calculation with advanced Grassmann tensor product states, and also a finite size calculation with actually did by my collaborators by using DMRG, and we benchmark these two results and make a conclusive some more conclusive statements. Okay. So now let me just first introduce what is the tensor product state. Just try to remind you, the audience who here not quite familiar about this technique. So let me just tell you some new perspective about the mean field theory. Usually we think about mean field theory actually just the tensor product of some local state. So actually in some different point of view, for example, for this like spin 1/2 model, we have spin up, we just associate with some complex number U up, and spin down just with some different complex number U down. And we just write down some wave function for any given Ising basis. So this MI can take a value either up or down. So just a multiplication of this all these complex number. So actually that's a wave function for any kind of mean field state, right? But of course in here, we have very limited information because just one qubit, because we only have two complex number here, just a U up and a U down. But of course, it's not a surprise that such kind of answers cannot capture all the exotic phases in strongly correlated system. And a natural generalization, actually first proposed by many people doing this numerical density matrix normalization group calculation, that such kind of answers called the matrix product state. So the concept is pretty easy there. You just think about we don't consider this spin up configuration associated with a complex number, but actually associated with some complex matrix that's called A up. And then we, for down component, also have some matrix A down. Then this wave function just generated by some matrix product of this A matrix. And for periodic boundary condition, we just take a trace. And graphically, we can just use some this kind of three-leg guide to represent this matrix, because this vertical index is the physical index, take up or down, and horizontal, just some kind of internal indices. And this dimension of the internal indices can be chosen in arbitrary way, and the larger, the better, if the computation power can afford such kind of cost. So here it's easy to see that such kind of state naturally produce some entanglement between nearest neighbor site. But in the mean field case, there's no entanglement at all. So that's could be a good reason why such kind of answers works pretty well in the 1D system. And then later people just generalize such kind of answers by some geometrically consideration into high dimension. So it's very natural to think about a state just has more internal lag stick out, not just on the horizontal, but also on the vertical. So in the 2D plane, you think about there are four internal lags. And in this graphic representation, this tensor have four internal lag and one this physical lag. Once we fix this physical configuration, we connect the internal lag, just means sum over this indices there. So we get some complex number, which is a wave function we call the tensor product states wave function. Okay, so it's just some kind of general way to construct a variational states. But naturally, we want to ask why it's useful. So people doing quantum information theory, they have a very interesting perspective on such kind of state. So the argument is that there's a conjecture for any local Hamiltonian, the ground state should satisfy the so-called area law. So then they show such kind of construction naturally give rise to generic states that preserve area's law. So their construction just we split some physical lattice into four sub-lattices here. So you think about there are, it's not just a spin 1/2, it's four spin 1/2 on this physical lattice. And they prepared some so-called kind of this parent state, so which just the decoupled dimer between the inter-site subsets. Then this tensor can be viewed as a projector that bring back the state to the physical Hilbert space, because this LRU down, this kind of sublattices represent some auxiliary or fictitious Hilbert space. But then by acting, this projector bring back to the physical Hilbert space. So in terms of such kind of concept, it's pretty similar as the projective wave function construction, but just in a more general way. And moreover, people show that in 2+1D, a new class of phases of matter, so the so-called topological ordered phases, will also satisfy area law, but there's some constant subtraction called as topological entropy, can also naturally captured by such kind of construction. And there are also some rigorous proof for the phase for representation for topological ordered states. Okay, and more important, recent years, we have tested this method numerically on many different models. For example, some model can be studied by quantum Monte Carlo as well, like a transverse IC model and a Heisenberg model on square lattice and a Hanekam lattice. Actually, people put many effort on this direction to benchmark with the quantum Monte Carlo, and it shows incredible accuracy in these cases. And more interesting, 2 years ago, we performed some calculation for the J1, J2 model, and we also found some intermediate spin liquid phase, which is also consistent with predictions from some independent DMRG calculation on a few lags ladders, maybe 10 lags ladders. Yeah, but our answer is some thermodynamic limit answers, and the ground energy perfectly agree with the DMRG calculation. Okay, so this kind of results seems encouraging, and that's the reason why we want to generalize this method into a Feynman system as well. So,
just a very quick question. Do you believe that you can represent any gap ground state with a finite size?
For quantum double, if there is no gravitational anomaly on the edge, we can rigorous proof. But in the presence of a gravitational anomaly like a chiral edge, then could it be a good approximation, but not exact representation. Yeah.
I see. And without gravitational anomaly, what is the computational complexity of finding a good?
Finding it could be sharply hard, but representation for fixed point state could be easy. Yeah, but so that's why this field kind of difficult, and we make great effort to try to push this by years. Yeah, so usually you need to develop some kind of imaginary time evolution method, and in general, it's not easy in high dimension. Yeah. Yeah, finding the state could be sharply harder in 1+1D. There are some counter example you can construct, but that might be unphysical. Yeah, but not exponential on system size. Actually, I think the most difficulty is that for certain states. I think even in 1D, if I remember the counter example correctly, it's for infinite system size. So the system size not really too hard, because in 1D, Guifery developed this infinite MPS algorithm. So the system size not a big problem, but there could be some very weird ground state. You can never find the binary variational method. So that's why this kind of variational method should be carefully benchmarked with other method. It's easy to trap in some local minimal, and you will miss the global minimal. Yeah, that's possible.
Just more practically, you just can't deal with a very large tensor product state bond dimension. That's really more.
Yeah. The dimension is typically limited, but I will show you actually in high dimension, for even for small bound dimension, the results are pretty good. Okay, so let me briefly mention what's the difficulty for this TPS for Feynman system. So I try to remind you how to simulate a Feynman system. So typically, if we want to simulate some Feynman system numerically, we try to put some order for the fork basis, right? Then we can map this Feynmanic creation operator to some boson creation operator, but with some kind of string-like operator. And in this case, actually, this Feynman hopping term are non-local. in higher dimension. And then if we just naively want to write down some tensor product state, it actually does not work. For example, here we want to describe some spinless fermion. So zero means fermion parity, even means no fermion, and one means fermion number is one. But once you write down such kind of a wave function in a bosonic way, you lose the information of the this ordering of the fork basis. For example, you can order make this order in different way, and you expect you should generate some sign for the wave function. But here, there's no way to specify such kind of ordering. So it looks like we need some modification for the tensor product state. And so such kind of modification has been proposed for a couple of years, actually, first by Xerox group in 2009. And later, we used some equivalent Grassmann tensor network representation, try to encode a fermionic wave function. So the major difficulty is that for a fermion system, we always deal with fork basis. And the fork basis have some natural ordering. And the wave function is kind of overlap with the fork basis. So that's why it could depend on the particular scheme of ordering the basis. So the idea to make this fork basis ordering encoded in a natural way, we just introduce some so-called graded structure for the internal degree of freedom, this auxiliary kind of degree of freedom. So there, we specify this inner indices ABC, for example, on the Hanukkah lattice, carry some fermion parity quantum number. So this PA could be either 0 or 1. Then when PA equal to 1, we just attach some Grassmann variable here on this internal lag. And Grassmann algebra just satisfy this kind of relation. Then we also generalize this canonical data function to some Grassmann measure. And the kind of such kind of trick, actually, the final purpose just to try to impose this fermion statistics. So the constraint, when we impose the constraint that the fermion parity on the physical side plus the fermion parity on the inner side should be even, then we can naturally encode the fermion ordering sign in such kind of wave function. So you look at this wave function, when m is odd, then it always carry order number of Grassmann variable. Then the wave function really depending on how you're ordering all these Grassmann tensor, right? So then we generate this fermion sign in a natural way. And it's because each local tensor, if you also consider including this physical degree of freedom, it's always fermion parity even. Then you can manipulate in a local way and to do this calculation in a pretty efficient and easy way. Okay, so now let me just show you some benchmark with some free fermion and a simple interacting fermion system. So the first system I want to tell you just this very simple fermion pairing problem on the Hanukkah lattice and with the chemical potential term. And if the chemical potential is very large, this system pretty simple, just a gapped system. And the mu equal to 0 is a critical system. So I will benchmark both case. So the algorithm we perform is not a simple variational calculation because in the calculation of Grassmann energy, there could be truncation error. So the variational method sometimes is not so reliable. So we need to introduce this so-called imaginary time evolution method. It's kind of a projection method. Okay. And then after we derive this Grassmann wave function, we just use the Grassmann tensor network entanglement randomization algorithm to compute its Grassmann energy. And then if we introduce this cutoff boundary dimension to be large, we can compute this energy into very high accuracy. And also, once we have this ground state, it also can be computed by other methods like this infinite PEPS method and also a quantum and color method to benchmark it with the energy. So in many cases, we found this consistency in very high accuracy. Okay, so let me show you the example for the gapped fermion. For example, when mu equal to 1, so it's just a gapped fermion, and the ground state energy can be computed exactly. So we just use a very simple answer. This inner dimension just a minimal, just a d equal to 2. So d equal to 1 is trivial, and there's no way to encode a fermion for d equal to 1. So d equal to 2 just means one channel is bosonic, one channel is Grassmann. Then we just compute this doing imaginary time evolution and compute Grassmann energy, and it shows that all these points right sit on this benchmark curve. And we also look at this kind of decoupled dependence. It's some parameter I introduced in this algorithm, because exact contraction for tensor network can be sharply hard. So here we need to do some approximation. So you see that if we increase decut, the energy converges pretty well. It's almost flat. And then we benchmark with this mu equal to zero. So in that case, this Hamiltonian is almost like a spinless graphene, and it's critical to have this Dirac cone. But when we increase this d equal to four, we see this ground energy always also very close to the benchmark of the curve. And with increased decut, it's also flat, right? So which shows the energy computation, the accuracy is already very high, up to 0.4%. Okay, but although here we still see the critical system, the energy is still slightly higher than this exact calculation. Okay, so the experience we get here is that this method typically work extremely well for gapless system, but could have slightly larger cost for critical system. Okay, so now let me try some also simple but interacting Fermion system. So it's again some Fermion hopping model, but with attractive interaction. So that's almost the simplest example Nick and Reed proposed for this spinless P plus IP superconductor. So just a spinless Fermion with nearest neighbor attractive interaction. And by performing this numerical calculation, we show the ground energy pretty consistent with the exact diagonalization energy on this small cluster. And more important, we initialize this TPS ansatz in a completely random way, and no pre-assumption for any, pre-assumption for superconducting all the parameter. And the P plus IP pairing pattern emerged during this imaginary time evolution, which means if I perform imaginary time evolution at the beginning, I don't see any kind of particular this kind of phase shift on three different bounds. But in the end, if the algorithm converges, you can see such kind of phase shift in very high accuracy in terms of numerical digits. So this phase should be like e to I 2 pi over 3, but here just to see this numerical digits is pretty close to the P plus IP pattern. So, but at the beginning, you don't see such kind of pattern, just to see some like uniform S wave like pairing. But when you decrease energy, such kind of pattern really develops. So this is very important because it's different from the previous variation of Monte Carlo method. We just import some pre-assumption kind of all the parameter minimize energy. Then we always get trapped in such kind of local minimum. Okay, now we want to implement to this interesting problem, namely this infinite U Hubbard model on honeycomb lattice. First, we just compute this ground state energy. Then, very surprising, we find that this Nagaoka state is unstable there. The argument is simple, because Nagaoka state is just some free Fermion state with all Fermion polarized along one direction, so it's just a Fermion surface. So it just compute the energy for Nagaoka state exactly, so which is the benchmark curve of this green curve. Then we just use this Grassmann tensor network method to compute the ground state energy. As well, we also use this DMRG calculation for small system size, also get some benchmark energy, which is labeled by this black curve. Okay, so there we see that for increase this in dimension D, up to D equal to 14, this ground state energy pretty well sit on the benchmark curve, which means we get some thermodynamic limit, which the ground state energy pretty good, at least comparable with the small size DMRG calculation. But apparently it's not a Nagaoka state because energy is lower. So it cannot be the same state, must be something different. Then it's interesting to think about whether it is still have some ferromagnetic ordering or not. So first we want to check the ferromagnetic ordering. Surprisingly, we find this state still have almost fully polarized magnetization. So it looks like very close to the Nagaoka state.
This looks like at a higher doping, you need to increase the bounding.
Yeah. So our results get pretty well, like up to 20%. Actually, after 20%, this Nagaoka state melt. There's no ferromagnetic ordering. But below 20%, we find this ground state still have almost fully polarized ferromagnetic ordering. Yeah.
Why don't you have, so why is it the different these and
correspond to different dopings and not? Oh, because I use the chemical potential to compute control the doping, so it could have slightly shifted. Yeah, if I impose this U1 symmetry explicitly, maybe you can fix doping. But then yeah, I just simulated this ground canonical ensemble. So yeah, it's in terms of code, it's easy. But yeah, just I think yeah, in general, it's a mixture of different particle number. If I don't impose U1 symmetry,
but
yeah.
You would expect not to have this. You would expect that the true ground state has well-defined particle number.
Yeah, but if it's a superconducting state, you should expect a superposition of different particle number, because this simulation, the imaginary time evolution is performed for infinite system. So it's in the thermodynamic limit, you must get a superposition of a different particle number. Yeah, but of course, I will show you in some cases. Yeah.
The energy for a finite system, but the
state is for thermodynamic limit. So it's like a variational Monte Carlo, yeah. So you only simulate energy on some cluster. So actually, it's I mentioned the size. It's like almost 1,000 sites to make sure the energy computation is converged. But the state is for thermodynamic limit. Yeah. So okay, sure. So then very naturally, we can ask what's the true ground state here. So we examine this pairing pattern for different channels like triplet and singlet. And pretty surprising, we find this pairing pattern vanish in singlet channel, but it's still there in the triplet channel. And actually, because in the triplet channel, the system is fully polarized, so it's always the only survive for the channel that's parallel for the ferromagnetic order parameter. So actually, it's a P plus IP ordering. And we examine this order parameter. It's like almost a linear increase as doping. And we check a different bounded dimension. This order parameter almost on the same curve. Yeah. OK, so now we came up with a conclusion that the true ground state actually is a P plus IP superconductivity coexist with the ferromagnetic ordering. But on the other hand, we are still curious about what's the mechanism for such a kind of exotic superconductivity, right? It's not expected in a simple way. Yeah. So it's almost on the same trade. Yeah. Yeah. I just have a few data still running the computation. Yeah. Okay. So before answering that question in terms of effective field theory, I want to tell you some more numerical results by perturbed the system. We just added some very small j, which means U is still extremely large, but just perturb the system a little bit. And pretty interesting, like for this T over J equal to 30, which means U is still almost very, U over T like 120, still very large, but not infinite. We find ground state energy pretty consistent with the DMRG calculation. And here, like T over J equal to 50, also pretty consistent with DMRG calculation. Then we measuring this ground state property. For example, this magnetic order, it turns out to vanish. So that means this kind of ferromagnetic ordering kind of fragile. It's not very robust. And on the other hand, in this case, we measure this P plus IP superconductor. It's different from the previous example, which is almost a D independent. It has a huge D dependence. And if we do some 1 over D scaling, you will find it vanish in the infinite D limit. And that means, although in the infinite U limit, we get some kind of P plus IP pairing, but it could be fragile and vanish for turning on any small value of J. But on the other hand, in the practical purpose, we just can add some Zeeman field, for example, parallel for the AB plane. And you see, when this Zeeman field energy scale on order of J, it just have a first order translation to this P plus IP state. So for practical reason, we can still stabilize the state and find a potential application. Okay, but it's pretty interesting. Once we kill this ferromagnetic ordering, we get some non-Fermi liquid state because there's no any kind of order at all. So yeah, let me just tell you some simple explanation by using quantum field theory. So in the infinite U limit, we know this ferromagnetic ordering state is some still some pretty good metal stable state. So it's reasonable to think about to use the slave fermion technique to study that state, because once this B condense, we naturally get a ferromagnetic ordering. Then we write on some effective Lagrangian in terms of some minimal coupling principle. We assume this holon, this F, which is fermionic holon and a bosonic spinon, holon coupled to U1 gauge fluctuation, but with a relativistic dispersion. This will come from the minimal coupling principle. And also, this spinon part we describe by CP1, because usual ferromagnetic order have a quadratic dispersion. But here, in the extremely strong fluctuation limit, we should expect it could be similar to the anti-ferromagnetic. And we need to use the CP1 model to describe it, because that's the only way you can write down some covariant gauge coupling. Okay, so then although this model is not rigorously derived from any lattice calculation, but it's still reasonable low energy effective theory from this kind of point of view. And especially in the limit that when B condenses, we can expect that this gauge fluctuation is controlled, right? Because it's in a Higgs phase. So we just condense B to the upper sector and express B as like a V multiple E to I theta. So theta is the phase fluctuation. So then we can treat this theory in quadratic level. So we just plug this in here, and then we get something like this. So the next step is kind of a routine step. We use the dualized duality transformation. So we impose some Hubbard-Strunow wedge field cosec here to kind of replace this piece. So when integral out this auxiliary field cosec, we get this piece. Okay, but with this dualized field cosec, we can study this quantum fluctuation for this effective Lagrangian. So the recipe is in the following. So first, we decompose this theta, which is the phase fluctuation for this part, into this Gaussian piece and a singular piece. So that's a standard procedure, right? Then we integrate out this Gaussian piece. After we integrate out this Gaussian piece, we derive some constraint. So it's in order to solve this constraint, we can just introduce some new dualized gauge field, small a. And once we introduce this new dualized gauge field, this constraint can be solved automatically. And once we solve this constraint, we get some dualized theory. So in this dualized theory, we have both the capital A and small a. So the small a is kind of the gauge field coupled to the vortex field. And this J mu is the vortex current. So you see this cos is a singular part. So it's the vortex current coupled to this small a. And we also have a transaminance term for bigger A and small a. And also here, importantly, we want to add some small mass term for the vortex field, because it's reasonable to think about in the ferromagnetic order, this Skirman excitation will have a finite gap. Okay, so now we just brute force integral out this capital A, because this capital A just have linear term. So they just impose some constraint like this. This is a standard, this magnetic flux of the dualized gauge field, just a particle number. But here, something interesting. It looks like this electric flux of the of this dualized gauge field is also the particle number. So if we plug in these two constraints into this equation, finally, we find something interesting. So this coupling term becomes something like a Yukawa term. And after we integral out this singular part, the vortex contribution, we get some free fermion Lagrangian, but with effective attractive interaction. So then we have a good reason to understand why we can have superconductivity, because the holon Fermi surface in the Nagaoka state is indeed unstable due to this gauge fluctuation. And finally, let me just provide some cartoon picture about this mechanism. Actually, the cartoon picture is in the following. If we assume at some virtual scale, we have a Skirman excitation, because Skirman have a gap. So in the ground state, there's no Skirman. but it could serve as a virtual excitation. Once we have this virtual excitation, this holon will feel like a pi flux, so get a scattering around this vortex. And such kind of scattering actually kind of plays a role as a phonon and can induce attractive interactions for this holon. So here we propose a new mechanism, this skirmium-mediated superconductivity in this infinite U-Hubbard model. And of course, it's non-BCS because this gauge fluctuation and the concept of spin charge separation is pretty important. We should treat this holon and spinon as two independent fields. And the interaction just mediated by this fictitious U1 gauge theory, right? So finally, we also speculate that the proliferating of skirmium excitation actually leads to potential non-fermion liquid, because once we condense this skirmium, naturally we expect some state with no order at all. So it could be a very interesting intermediate energy scale to study the Hubbard model for large but finite U. Okay, so I don't want to hold too long time for lunch, and understand everyone hungry. So let me just quickly summarize this and tell you some interesting material. So the material called indium vanadium copper oxide. So such kind of material, like, just like cuprates, have a honeycomb geometry formed by this cuprate sites. So at half filling, people measured it and found the antiferromagnetic magnetic ordering. And we proposed if we can plus doping and plus some implant magnetic field, maybe stabilize this P plus IP topological superconductor. And then more interesting, if you add a pressure tuning this ratio between U over T, maybe also find a spin liquid. So the material in terms of chemistry, it's like this. So we have this vanadium oxide layer, like an insulating layer, and an indium oxide layer, and a copper vanadium oxide layer actually form the triangular lattice. But the vanadium sits at the hexagon center. So the active layer is the copper oxide layer from this hexagon lattice. And the vanadium have 5+, the copper have 2+. And the copper carries spin 1/2. So it's a perfect honeycomb lattice Hubbard model. And people also measure this magnetic susceptibility at half filling and find the antiferromagnetic ordering and estimate this new temperature to be 37 Kelvin. So it's, it's kind of 10 times smaller than the usual cuprates. So we expect this the ratio of T over J actually time 10 times bigger than the cuprates. So could it be like approach the region like 30? So that's the ideal region for this P plus IP superconductivity we proposed. Okay, let me just quickly conclusion. We performed this Grassmann tensor network simulation for strongly interacting electron system. And we found a very strong numerical evidence that the honeycomb lattice infinite Hubbard U model actually support P plus IP superconductivity, which coexists with the ferromagnetic ordering, and at doping less than 20%. So beyond 20%, all these orders vanish. And also based on controlled quantum field theory calculation, we propose a non-BCS mechanism for such a kind of superconductivity, which is this, very interesting, the skirmium-mediated superconductivity. And we also propose the potential material and experiment realization for such kind of superconductivity, which could be very useful for future photolerance quantum computation. And finally, I think our results also shed a new light for the novel mechanism of high TC cuprates. For example, in the high TC cuprates, I think there's no such kind of coexisting phase. But there could be some other possibility that the skirmion just actually trap a pair of holon, and then the skirmion condense might naturally lead to this D-wave superconductivity. So here, in a parallel work, we propose in the J1, J2 spin liquid, if this skirmion trap a pair of spinon and the skirmion condense naturally leads to a pneumatic Z2 spin liquid. So that's a similar idea we propose in this paper. Okay, thanks for your attention. Oh yeah, that's a theoretically important limit. But on the other hand, in practical reason, I show that if you add some Zeeman field, you can drive the system effectively to the infinity U limit. You can just kill this small J term.
Right. Yeah. You know, you claim that this method works well, so why don't you go and check how it works at
smaller U. Oh, yeah, yeah, I checked, yeah. That, no, yeah, yeah, I, actually, we have the full phase diagram for Hubble model, yeah, on honeycomb lattice, yeah.
And that doesn't agree with the previous work because we were
going forward and we don't mention. Yeah, we did not go to this 25%. We just stick below 20%, yeah. The doping is below 20%. Sorry? Oh, sure. Sure, sure, sure. Yeah, basically, so in this almost infinite U region, we find some P plus IP and plus a plus Fermi order. And there's a domain of U over T, almost on order 4. There's phase transition from, yeah, actually, in our simulation, we did not find the spin liquid. But a recent quantum Monte Carlo also claimed there's no spin liquid, so I don't know. It's just a semi-metal here. And then it's anti-ferromagnetic ordering. And once we dope this anti-ferromagnetic, so this domain may be something like this for AF. And then we dope it, we find something like a D plus ID ordering. But when this U over T pretty large, like larger than, maybe larger than 20 or 30, then in this region, there's nothing. They're kind of some non-Fermi liquid, yeah. In this region,
yeah.
Nothing. All the vanishes, yeah. Yeah, so here it's crucial that only when this U over T larger than 4, we dope the system, we got a D plus ID ordering, but at this very small U, there's no superconductivity. But yeah, I understand. No, there's no contradiction because the weak coupling calculation actually means it's kind of exponentially small temperature, which cannot be detected by this variational method. So there's no contradiction. And in practical case, I think the temperature also pretty low there. Because the whole pockets, I think it's almost stable. And of course, the weak coupling region, there could be something, but it's not easily to see from the variational calculation because the energy splitting is exponentially small in that case. Yeah. It's almost infinity. So in my calculation, I checked the phase boundary less than 50. It's kind of there's a region. Yeah, but I don't know the phase boundary, but I can make sure in the infinite limit, it's the P plus IP and plus the Fermi-Magnet ordering. Yeah. Yeah, I think so. And not skirmion. I think you create some flux in the for the superconducting order parameter. It's not a skirmion of the ferromagnetic ordering. Yeah, for the skirmion of the ferromagnetic ordering, I think yeah, there's no marginal Fermi. It's a flux of the superconducting.
Okay, well, I think we better break for lunch and then we can go after the discussion. So
that's the discussion. Thanks.